watching a YouTube video and nobody commented and only one person liked it, it probably wasn't very good.
Hey, Gary, it's Timothy M. Evans, CEO of Athlete Web Design in Chicago. Really appreciate you selecting me as a book winner to be featured in the Ask Gary V book. As a marketer who works with pro athletes, I sometimes get players and agents questioning why an athlete needs a website. Gary, what would you say to a current pro athlete, retired athlete, or even an up-and-coming athlete who is getting scholarship offers who wants to brand themselves online? Should an athlete have an official website? If businesses are now considered media companies, should athletes be thinking along the same lines?
The answer is yes. What I would say to everybody is, look, I don't want to be at the vulnerability of just making my monies or have my opportunity just predicated on what I do on the field. You know any of these guys stop playing football or baseball at 27, 29, 32, 34, and then have the rest of their lives ahead of them? By building a brand or a website, you're creating other ways for good things to happen for you because you don't want to put in the work because you've decided that you've quote-unquote made it and you're going to just make your millions from playing sports. Sure, for the 1% to 2% of athletes that hit the biggest contracts in the world, I guess you can debate they don't want to, but do they want to actually do other things? Wouldn't an athlete that made $300 million maybe want to make a website to help the charities that he cares about? Maybe to put some of his friends on and give them exposure? There's only good that can come out of communication if you communicate well. And by not having a website, that athlete is basically not communicating to the world on their terms. What about all the athletes that hate the media because they spin every word? Wouldn't it be great to have your own website where you can actually talk to the world on your terms? Becoming a media company is powerful. Media controls the conversation. I'm stunned that there's a single agent that isn't giving that advice. It sounds like a sucky agent. And athletes, if you're paying attention, this is a way for you to do good for you.
This is Jack Haber. I'm the Vice President of Global Advertising at Colgate-Palmolive, and I'm very excited to be asking Gary some important questions. You say to put quality content out daily. Can I add curated content? And if so, what's the mix?
First and foremost, I think everybody will get a kick out of this. VaynerMedia does not do any business with Jack. I actually think Jack is a very talented marketer, and I've been fond of him. So, Jack, thanks for doing this, and I thought everybody get a kick out of that, so I wanted to say that. Anyway, of course you can. I think about curated content the way I think about DJs, right? They didn't create the song, but they mixed it in a way that brought value to the audience. As a matter of fact, if you follow music trends, DJs are becoming more famous than the actual songwriters. So I think you can absolutely be a curator. As a matter of fact, what is the evening news or SportsCenter? It's a curation of all the content that happened in the world that day. So I think curating content is an incredibly good idea. You look at Jason Hirschhorn's email newsletter. So many people follow it. Tech Meme, what Nuzzle, the app, does for me. These are incredibly powerful tools. Curation is very valuable because it's saving people time. I don't have to go and read every article to decide which 10 are the best. It's why Twitter works. It's how things bubble up. And it could be a mix. I would tell you that I do that very poorly. It makes me sad that I'm not curating more because I know it's valuable, but it takes a lot of time and effort to go through all that information to curate. And so if you get a balance of 80-20 or 20-80 or 10-90 or 90-10, find your cadence. For a lot of people, they're not capable of coming up with creative ideas or new thoughts. And what they're meant to do is be tremendous curators. Curators have always been great. And now that you can do both under one account, I think that's a great strategy. I'm devastated that I can't do it myself.
I work in two different spaces. How do I use social media platforms so that I'm not confusing my audience?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, this is interesting because I actually lived the life of doing both. I was the wine guy and the social media guy at the same time from 2009 to probably 2014. And I was carrying both, and I actually thought it was an advantage for me. I think one thing that we forget is that most humans are multidimensional. There's a lot of things we like. I think one of the biggest mistakes a lot of you are doing in your social networks right now is you don't talk about your love of root beer or that you're good at horseshoes or that you're on the dart team or that you love shopping. Like, you stay just in your lane and you're not letting people connect with you with other subject matters. On the flip side, it's actually very easy if you want to separate them, right? You can create separate Facebook fan pages. You can create separate Instagram accounts. With the phone, you can switch back and forth, sign in with one password, sign out. It's actually not complicated. I would argue, unless they're two very, very, very different things that you think hurt each other, unless you're like a Republican in one and a Democrat in another, or other, you know, or a Jets fan on one and a Patriots fan on another, as long as they're not completely crazy, I actually would push and urge many of you to mix them because I think it's a bigger 360 view of who you actually are.
Is there a way to drive traffic to a website when posting content directly to Facebook?
I never say that a question is stupid, so I won't do it now. But if there was ever a question that made absolutely no sense, and I'm so glad this question's in the book because it allows me to get pissed off and I like when I'm salty. A lot of you have been using the hashtag SaltyV. I'm salty here. Like, what kind of question? Yeah, the answer is yeah. Facebook is the biggest driver to website traffic on the internet now besides Google searching. I mean, not only is there a way, BuzzFeed and 100 other media companies built their entire businesses on the backbone of Facebook pushing traffic towards their website.
Should I wait until my website is 100% built before putting out content, or put out content while I'm still building it?
There's really two schools of thought here, and I think they're both right. Tommy Mottola, the legendary ex-president of Sony Music, once reached out to me, and he had a car pick me up, and I drove 4 hours up to upper Westchester. And, we had a very funny meeting. It was super fun for me. I was a young kid, and he said something interesting to me. He said, "Gary, never go on television until your record's out." What he was talking about was promoting, and he basically said a lot of my competition will put the star singer on TV 2 days before their album comes out, and the CD's not at the Virgin Megastore yet, and I think that's super stupid because people are at the height of their emotion and they run out and go and get at the store and it's not there yet. And it was a really interesting kind of story around striking when the iron's hot, making sure you do it when people are ready to consume it. And that would be the argument of no, don't put out content yet because you have nowhere to drive them, and so you're losing out all those direct links to the website and da-da-da-da-da-da. On the flip side, there's a real argument to start building an audience towards that event, kind of the pre-hype and things of that nature. And Tommy was referring to a very old-school world of television driving you into Sam Goody's to buy a record, right? You know, in a world where now you can build an audience and a community on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, and then once you have it, siphon them to something. You look at DJ Khaled, who built a huge audience on Snapchat, and now he's sending them to his web store to sell his merchandise. I think both work. I understand both. And I think if you have time to do the content while you're building the website, I would do it. I would also say, if it's you building the website, put all your energy into getting the website done and then start it. So there was really no right or wrong way here. I just wanted to make sure I painted a picture for the audience that understood there's two ways to go about it, and you should be self-aware and decide which one works for you best. Are you the kind of person like me that likes to do multiple things at a time that keeps you going? Or are you the kind of like type A where like, okay, I'm gonna finish the website. Don't force yourself to do something that doesn't come natural to you.
Should I avoid doing podcasts or videos if I have a foreign accent?
I think that's crazy. Actually, it's not that crazy. Unfortunately, America has a funny bias to accents. We're very pro-America. I don't disagree. I love the U.S. more than anybody. But I would say I understand this question so cold. My parents are embarrassed of their accent. And my mom used to not go to parent-teacher conferences. Like, they literally are embarrassed of their accent. And so I have a lot of empathy for this question, but I think that that's a crazy thought and you should go for it. Accents a lot of times are an advantage. I would tell you that if you have a British accent, most of my American friends think that you're smarter or more regal. So look, I think that it's a very personal question. I'm very close to it because I've seen my parents be less social, less out there because of their accent. But I don't think the market's going to penalize you for an accent, especially if you have something good to say.
If you're not from an English-speaking country, should you produce content in English to reach a higher number of people, or should you produce content in the native language of your country?
You know, I'm always a fan of the answer of both. So there's always both. If you got the time and the energy and the talent, both. But if you don't, I would say that you need to just figure out what you're trying to accomplish. You know, if you're trying to go global, it's probably a good idea to go English. But if you want to be the biggest wine merchant in Indonesia, maybe you go with the native tongue. And so I also think technology is going to solve this. I think, you know, we're getting closer and closer to a day and age where you're going to press a button and you're going to be dubbed over and you could be everywhere in the world. And so, you know, I think this is very easy for me to answer. And I'm going to try to go philosophical with this so it brings value to everybody. If you understand what you're trying to accomplish, your actions will map to that. So if you're trying to reach as many people as possible, you're going to go with English. If you just want to build the biggest building in town, and I'm using the word biggest building as a slang term for the biggest business, the biggest awareness, the biggest thing you want in your town, and that happens to be in Japan, you may just want to go Japanese. So know what you're trying to accomplish and go backwards on this question. Heck, that's probably the answer to everything.
I'm growing my business and looking to include partners for content. What's the best way to recruit them? Money? The promise of exposure?
Yes. Let's go to the next one. Okay, just kidding. The answer is yes. But now I'm really getting into a theme. It's reverse engineering. You go to somebody you want, you like their content, you're like, hey, I would argue you start with promotion because it costs you less, right? So, hey, I'll make you a featured blogger. You could be part of the site. I'll link to all your accounts, to your website. And if they say, you know, people say that to me all the time. And I'm like, get the hell out of here. Well, let me rephrase. In 2006, 7, 8, 9, I said, yep. Because back then, that was what was valuable to me. Now, because I've reached a different level, that's not as easy. Time is a bigger issue for me. And so now I say, get out of here. But if they said, we'll give you $50,000 to blog post on our site, then I would say, when do you want it? And so I think the answer is very simple. You offer both. I would start with the exposure because it costs you less money. Unless, believe it or not, unless you've got tons of money to throw around and you don't want to waste time negotiating back and forth, they're going to say yes to money. The Million Dollar Man in WWF 1980s was one of the great, great philosophers of all time. He said, everybody's got a price. And he's right. So money always works if you can hit their price, but I would go with exposure first.
How much time do you spend creating a single piece of content? Do you focus on video because it's more natural for you?
The answer is I do spend more time on video, meaning not more time on an individual piece of content, but produce a lot more video because it comes very natural to me. I'm very improv. I'm also not winning on my looks. So let me be serious about this. It doesn't take me as long to do an Instagram post because I'm not worried about the lighting. I know that I have bags under my eyes. And those were natural, by the way, before I even didn't sleep a lot. So, you know, I know what I've got going there. On the flip side, if you're a beauty model and you've got to put an Instagram photo, I have empathy towards why you might want to take 22 minutes taking 87 different shots because that's what you're selling. And so I think it comes down to what do you do well, how do you do it. For me, I'm positioned in a way where it's my thoughts, not my pictures, not my art, not my sound. It's my thoughts. So that's simple. And so I don't have to spend a lot of time on content. I never have and I won't. But I do think for a lot of people here, I'm sure Humans of New York and all the other photography platforms out there that use Instagram think long and hard about their shot, take multiple shots, edit it, filter it, tweak it. And so I think it comes down to what you're doing. But if you're lucky enough to be talking about content and just talking about things or just putting out words, then you go there. On the flip side, all my motivational quotes with my pictures in it that I put out that Andrew makes on my team as little status updates for Instagram, I'm sure he's taking a little bit of time. He's a, you know, graphic designer. He cares about the white background on the green lettering and centered in the middle. That's his craft, and he may be spending a little bit more time. So that's the answer.
You've talked before about recycling a tweet, but what about other content, such as a blog post? How often do you pull a piece from the archives to dust it off and republish?
So what we're referring to here with recycling a tweet is Twitter has gotten so noisy that I now will tweet the same thing multiple times in a day because I realize that I'm not reaching even a fraction of my audience, whereas 5 years ago, I would post it and I knew a majority would see it and I didn't need to repost it again. And I didn't want to bother the people that saw it the first time again. That's changing with the market. That was something I referred to earlier in the book. So what I would say is I haven't in my history taken a full blog post and reposted it 6 months later because it's evergreen content. On the flip side, I have DJ'd a lot of things, which is taking a portion of a blog post and then socially commentated on top of that, saying 6 months ago I said the following and this is what's happening now. So I think DJing versus recycling, I think editing, reshaping versus recycling is the key here. And by the way, I'm not against it. As a matter of fact, with Medium, which is a platform where people are blogging now, I think it's probably appropriate for a lot of you to take your 10 best blog posts of all time and post them on Medium because it's a different experience. I think as long as you continue to bring value, you can get away with anything. I think if you wrote such a great article that's still evergreen and you want to post it every 6 months, you know, there'll be a percentage of your audience that already saw it and they may be annoyed, but if you're still bringing a lot of people into your network, into your ecosystem, it's providing value.
I spend 10 to 15 hours on image posts I make for my company on social media. They're hand-drawn lettering posts as well as computer-drawn. I get way more likes on my hand-drawn posts than computer-drawn ones. But lettering takes a long time to do, and I don't think I can keep up a daily social media content output. What should I do?
You should do what we should all do, which is weigh the pros and the cons. It's quite simple. Is it worth your time for what you're getting out of it? I would tell you that if you're just getting likes and you can't tie it back into sales or something else that you want to happen, because, by the way, this is a great time to rant on this. Guys, social media engagement, for the sake of social media engagement, is a really bad business. You know, if it's a proxy towards success of getting a TV show, selling stuff, you know, getting a book deal, like if it's a proxy, a gateway drug, God bless. But just being caught up in the game of Rick got 19 likes and I got 17, I'm sad. That means nothing. So, like anything in the world, you need to really break down that hour by hour value prop. Let me break it in very business terms. If the hand-drawn stuff equaled 11 sales of a bottle of wine, and I was putting in 10 hours, I would say, okay, about a net bottle an hour, right? And the computer one was taking an hour, but selling 3 bottles, right? I would say, that's probably better. Now, I may say that in the long term, the hand thing's gonna go more viral and I'll win. So I can look at it at a micro moment and see what the ROI is, but I can also project with my intuition what the long tail is. That's ironically what you have to do here. We always have to value our time, return value in the short term, and what's the upside in the long term.
Hey everyone, this is Sean Duras. Fun fact, I actually am a success story from reading one of Gary's first books, Crush It. I read the book in college, decided to start an online business, that worked out, led to other things, now I'm crushing it in the social media, doing large campaigns, helping with social strategy, and I actually have one of the most engaged Snapchat accounts in the world. So, let's dig into some of these questions. Thanks for having me, Gary. Is it wrong to have my Pinterest account tied to my Twitter account so that when I post on Pinterest, it auto-posts to Twitter?
So this is maybe the most fun question so far in the book. First, Sean Duras, big shout out. I'm really excited about Crush It success stories. As a matter of fact, I am very confident that the Ask Gary V book is going to produce an enormous amount of Sean Duras's in the future. So looking forward to hearing from you guys. I answered this on the show. Yes, it is wrong. I am changing my answer. Yep, I hate when this happens, but it's true. And let me tell you why. I'm going to go into very hardcore detail, and this was one of the good reasons you bought the audiobook. And actually, the book that's out right now has a different answer. So that's kind of cool. So I always talk about making native content per platform and not using them for distribution. What's happened is I got too literal on it. What I didn't do a good job of was really explain what I meant by that, which was the following. People were trying to automate everything, right? See what's happening here? Pinterest, and it automatically goes to Twitter. And what I was worried about was that people were creating a scenario where people thought that there was human interaction happening, and it was a robot. It was a machine. Also what happened was Twitter changed. Twitter's changed along the way that allows you to crop pictures properly. So what used to happen on a Pinterest or a Tumblr or an Instagram post is you'd post it to Twitter for distribution, but it would be cut off or the link would be weird and it didn't look good. Recently, many of you have seen, for the first time ever, I've started doing this move with my Instagram account using IFT, which stands for If This, Then That. So three T's. Great little app. You know, you could do something like, if my weather app says it's raining, immediately automatically put into my Google Calendar, grab an umbrella at 7 a.m. Pretty cool, right? Efficiencies. So anyway, I'm doing that now with Instagram, but I've been able to crop my photos to work in Twitter. And there's an if link there, which proves that I'm doing the automation. So I would say this. Don't be lazy and only use Twitter for distribution, but it's not the worst thing in the world to use Twitter as a distribution tool to bring awareness to your Pinterest. And as a matter of fact, I'm using Twitter more and more as awareness to other things because it's the place I have my biggest audience. However, my least engaged audience by percentage now because Twitter is noisy. So before, and this is a hedge, and now I'm very excited about where Twitter's going, but if Twitter doesn't fix itself over the next 3 to 4 years, it will become MySpace. And so over these next 3 to 4 years, I'm going to siphon as much of my audience out of Twitter and try to get it into Snapchat and Instagram and other places, because that would be really sad that I had 1.2 million people following me on a platform that nobody goes to anymore and all the data's stuck there. So things are changing. Things are always changing.
How can I take my website to the next level by making it go viral and increasing sales and visibility?
Guys, if you're like me, you're starting to pick up on a pattern. People are asking me the same stuff over and over and over again in different ways, and it allows me to keep giving different kind of tweaks and strategies. But the truth is, it comes down to quality, and it comes down to quality of content, and it comes down to quality of biz dev. How good are you at getting awareness for yourself through your content and through distribution channels in other areas that bring awareness to you? There is no going viral. Viral is luck. Viral is a moment in time. Something happened. I don't know what the official definition of viral is these days, but I sure know that it's not calculated and 100% true every time. Hence viral, right? You know, how do you actually build a website that's successful? Put out great stuff on it. And then, again, let's say that you're reviewing and selling video games. Let me give you an answer. Go to twitter.com/search and search Call of Duty 4. Search Donkey Kong Land. Search Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. See what people are saying and engage with them. Twitter.com/search is an incredible biz dev tool. You can see what people are saying. You're allowed to talk to them on there. It's not private. You know, it's not weird. You jump in and now all of a sudden like, hey, this guy said Soda Popinski was the hardest guy to beat on Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, just like me. Then they click your profile. Now they're on your website. So you hustle. That's one way. You email all 15 top video game podcasters and you say, hey, I'd love to be on your show. One of them says yes. Remember Wayne? Then you get on. 47,000 people listened to it. 619 liked what you had to say. Maybe 20,000 liked what you said. Depends on what you say. Remember, content is the variable. Now they found out about your website, right? Maybe you got a couple bucks and you buy Facebook ads against all fans of PlayStation 3 and you put out some of your content and they see you that way. Guys, there's a million ways to biz dev. You go to all the forums and there's 1,000 of them about video games and you create an account and you become part of the community. You don't go on and spam everyone and say, come check out my site. You start just debating Zelda's best version and you become part of the community. You create content. And by the way, if you're exhausted from everything I said, I've left out 97 other tactics and it's going to take years for this to work. That's how.
I posted a video on Facebook that got 2,700 views and 35 shares in one day. It took 1 year for me to get that same number of views on YouTube. Should I focus on creating videos for Facebook exclusively?
This is tough. The answer is no if you have the time. Yes if you're very, very, very tight on time. But yes for only a period of time. Meaning, YouTube had those same things going on that Facebook did for you in 2006, 7, and 8. The problem is so many people went on, supply and demand. Facebook, for you at the time you asked that question, I bet you if you posted that same video today, you'd get less because Facebook video, when you asked this question, I recall because I was hot on Facebook video and answering all the questions, was also a land grab. Now it's got a supply and demand problem. Maybe there's a 15-second Instagram video that you can do, and then that becomes a supply and demand problem. So first of all, I'm always bullish on new emerging platforms at scale where you can win. So that's why maybe yes on Facebook. On the flip side, YouTube is a monster. And don't forget, even though you might get 319 views on a YouTube video, all it takes is the one right view to change the course of your career or your opportunities. So I would not go anywhere exclusively in a world of Facebook and YouTube, because those are the two bohemian sites. It's like, should I only go on Letterman and Leno? If, well, they wouldn't let you, but if they both allowed you to go on, you would have went on both. That's how I think about Facebook and YouTube. They are both very, very important, and you may ebb and flow in popularity on each platform, but there's so much attention on both that you've got to take them both seriously.
Since you're such a fan of Facebook videos, do you plan on embedding them on your own website instead of your YouTube videos? And is it more beneficial to do so if you're not monetizing?
That's a great question. The answer is Facebook, and I'm surprised. This question was probably asked a year ago on the show. Facebook's video embeds are still not great, still not rolling. The truth is I'm embedding YouTube videos still on my website, though at the time I probably would have thought a year later I'd probably do more Facebook. I think at the end of the day, YouTube still has an advantage of like a very clean, easier embed than Facebook does right now. Projecting to a day when Facebook is at that same place, if Facebook's share functionality on its embed video is very effective, I will go there, because that means somebody watching my video has a chance of bringing more people into my network by sharing it. And so that would be the key decision that I would go on, which is, are people sharing from your website embed into a Facebook ecosystem? If it's happening, I'm definitely going to go to Facebook.
You say you don't consume much media, but isn't it kind of necessary in order to put out relevant, current content?
No, and that's the truth. Let me explain. I think the reason I'm putting out relevant and current content, and the numbers speak for themselves, is because I'm paying attention to the community, not to other content around the world. What I mean by that is, what you're referring to and what most people ask me is, aren't you seeing what other people are doing? Can't you pick up stuff from them? And the answer is yes, if that's how you learn. That's not how I learn. As a matter of fact, I learn by watching how people respond to my stuff, and it's kind of like a self-circling thing. I put out content, I see what they do, I adjust to it. I consume my community, their actions, people that have 8 followers, 22 followers. I'm trying to figure out what my audience cares about. I'm not worried what Seth Godin or Guy Kawasaki or Jason Fried or Tim Ferriss are doing, because they're doing their thing. And as a matter of fact, I think one of the biggest reasons a lot of people are not becoming important voices in technology, media, business, social networks is because they're so affected by everybody else that they consume, they just become me too's. Right? And so my big advantage actually is my lack of reading books and my complete zero of following other people actually creates a scenario where I think the reason I've popped is because I'm fresh. It's because I'm naive. It's because I have different ways to say the same thing. People love my quotes because I'm not smart enough to have heard the original version of the quote, and I'm just making up my own version. There's a freshness. There's an original aspect to what I do, because maybe I'm influenced by the world. I think I'm influenced by black stand-up comedians in my speaking style, right? There's influences, but I've been able to be an original because I don't spend 4 hours a day listening to everybody else's podcast and reading 17 blog posts and their newsletters. And that's something a lot of you need to think about.
Is Pinterest really such a good marketing tool? And how could a small business like a restaurant use it well?
The answer is yes. Pinterest is a good marketing tool. As a matter of fact, go to Google right now and type in Pinterest success stories, and you will read about thousands of people that have made tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of dollars on the backbone of Pinterest, because hundreds of millions of people use it, and thus it's a good marketing tool. Is it a good marketing tool for you is the question that you and everybody else who's listening really wants to know. Let's get into the example, the restaurants. Look, can they put beautiful pictures of food? Sure, but that works even better on Instagram than it does on Pinterest. What I think you need to think about is, look, first and foremost, it is a very heavy female demo right now on Pinterest. So one of the things that I think is great is actually finding out how many of your patrons of your restaurant are actually on Pinterest. Let me explain. Imagine you walk into a restaurant and at the hostess, as soon as you walk in, there's a huge sign, not subtle, a little card, the half-assed version that all of you do by putting a little Facebook and Twitter logo in the window of your store, but you're really half-assing it. No, I mean a big-ass sign that says, are you on Pinterest? Now people are curious. Now they ask the person in the front of your restaurant, because you hired somebody for $13 an hour that actually knows about Pinterest, so remember that part, because don't just rely on your host or hostess, because they may not know. And they say, hey, I'm on Pinterest, what does this mean? Oh, ma'am, we're doing something really interesting. We're offering free desserts to anybody that's on Pinterest if they post a picture and put it on their Pinterest, and if you don't like it, say you don't, but if you do, you do. Now all of a sudden, imagine this is happening, and who doesn't want free dessert for a quick snap on their iPhone, right? Now all of a sudden, first person comes, they only have 50 followers on Pinterest. There's only 50 other women that follow that person, but it's a woman that lives in a small town of a restaurant, and the 50 people that happen to follow that woman are the other 50 moms in that high school that also live in that area. Now they say the chocolate is delicious. Oh, I'd never really been to Sal's Pizzeria before, and now they're coming. Or what about the Hail Mary? Because you got 90, 100, 500 people that had 30 and 40 and 50 people. But let's just say that the person that lives in town is the leading yarn expert on Pinterest with 78,000 people that follow her Pinterest board, and she snaps something around your cinnamon sticks and say it's delicious, and now you got 492 people coming to your restaurant because some people from 22 miles away decided to come. My friends, this is business. It works. It just, you have to be original. You have to be aggressive. You have to come up with stuff that matters. So Pinterest can be used by you by putting out photos, but you can also leverage people's communities. It just takes a little bit of creativity. It takes a commitment. It takes spending $400 on a nice sign on Pinterest. It takes investing $13 into a person. Wait a minute. Let me get this straight, Sal. You hired some kid from the local high school that knows about Pinterest, $13 an hour, to stand in the front of your restaurant? That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Why would a restaurant need to pay somebody $13? It's the same argument everybody told my dad of allowing his punk kid to buy a website. The internet was a fad, right? Right, old friends from New Jersey? The internet was a fad, wasn't it?
What kind of headlines attract you on social media?
Look, I think for me, the kind of headlines that excite me are things like Jets sign new linebacker, right? Or wine business explodes in Japan. Or, you know, former WWF wrestler Hillbilly Jim to be in New York this weekend. They're things that matter to me. And so I think one of the great things about what Facebook has done is they've created so much data that we can really target these kind of headlines to individuals. So first and foremost, recognize we now live in a world where you can do that around your business. The other thing that I think is super interesting is the BuzzFeedification, if that's a word I can anoint, of our society. I think over the last 5 to 7 years, mainly the last 2 to 3 years, we've all become aware of these headlines. 19 good-looking girls that live around the corner, right? Or 7 beers that you should drink before you die. Or the 63 best cars anybody's ever driven. That's clearly worked. Now, just like I talk about a lot, it's market dynamics. I can tell you from fact, from a lot of testing, those kind of headlines aren't working as much anymore because that's what we used to get people, and now it's not working anymore. So there's going to be different kinds of headlines that emerge. One of the new things I'm doing is very utilitarian headlines. And this may sound silly, believe it or not, it's countercultural right now, which is things like this individual tactic works on Facebook. It's just a sentence, right? Taking 3 pictures at a time works on Facebook, right? Pictures that have red in them on Instagram work better. Just a very direct punch to you, and people are really responding to that because they're kind of tired of the hyperbole of the 37 kittens that are the cutest in the world. So now I'm going the other way and being very direct, and I'm seeing very good early results. So on your next blog post or social media headlines, try that out.
I know you're not big on automation, but it's a reality. How do you decide what and when to automate, and what's your take on marketing automation software? You're an advisor at HubSpot. Thoughts on that space?
Let me use this as a clarity, and I did this a little bit earlier in the book, but I'm going to keep pounding this home. I do think that automation is a reality. I'm not against automation. I love automation. I don't like when automation is trying to trick the other person on the other end to make it feel like that's a human interaction. That's it. That's the flag in the ground. Let me give you an example. Early email marketing. I was there. Somewhere along the line, in very early 2000s, somebody was smart and figured out, wait a minute, what if we put the person's name in the email? Instead of saying, here's the wine deal, it would say, hey, Ben, comma, here's the wine deal. The problem was they cared about the automation more than the human aspect, meaning at that point, the technology boom of the early internet, That had never happened before. So the only time you ever saw "Hey Ben" was when a human being actually typed it. The problem was, so many of those early executions had "Hey Ben" in a different font, in a different color, in a different style, and you started realizing, oh, they're just trying to game me, and you started not liking that service. I don't like when people are trying to automate human interaction. For example, when the Boston Marathon massacre happened, the amount of friends and businesses that I saw tweeting as the country was beginning to really mourn what just had happened about promoting their book, as a matter of fact, one friend, to buy their new cell phone. These were scheduled tweets, right? And the automation made them look so crass, so out of touch, and they damaged their brand. There was a thing that happened on 9/11 with AT&T that really hurt them. Like, literally, there was multiple people in my office that gave up their AT&T subscription because of that. That's when automation goes bad. The Patriots, you know, I like to pick on them. They did a thing where you could put the name, your name on the back of a jersey, but then people started putting in really raw things, and that kind of was hurtful. Let me give you another example of why I'm concerned about this. You know how you go to a conference and everybody's networking? And you know the guy that just runs around and hands his business card to everybody? He doesn't even look you in the eye. He doesn't even say hello. It's just about him getting it off. It's really an automated kind of execution. Or the person that gives the same presentation every time without reading the context of the room. Non-human things are bad, especially when the person expects it to be a human interaction. And so automation is fine, and I'm super comfortable with it, but if you're trying to create scale around something that's not scalable, which is human interaction, you will create a vulnerability.
How do you think overly edited photos and text overlays affect the authenticity of Instagram posts?
You know, I think this falls into the romantic point of view and the quality point of view. Let me explain. Look, I think quality is in the eye of the beholder, and I think if you're a photographer or somebody that loves art, you see this beautiful photo, and then over it says, buy this portrait in, like, some crappy font. You're like, that got ruined, right? But then there's also, like, the point and the intent. So I believe this is truly a very subjective kind of call. For me, I'm a businessman, right? So when I see a good copy right hook on top of a pretty picture, I'm like, yeah, get it, sell that stuff. But I recognize that my artist friends are like, you've ruined America, Gary. You've ruined the art. And I think because Instagram specifically started as a very photographer, artistic place, I have empathy for why people feel like now it's being ruined by these kind of edits. I just know that that's what always happens. I mean, just the way it is. So that's kind of how I see it.
What advice would you give people who want to grow their companies but don't have your personality and have a hard time meeting people?
Well, first I would take a step back and let everybody understand that there are millions of hardcore introverts and antisocial or awkwardly social individuals building enormous businesses. I met a gentleman a couple weeks ago who built an $800 million business and barely could look at my eye the entire time. I would say to bet on your strengths. If you're a hardcore data nerd and not the greatest, you know, life of the party, then don't go build a party experience business. Go build a math business. So first and foremost, we have to ground ourselves in understanding that truth. For me, I bet on my strengths, my personality, my leadership, my putting out content. But this is a classic example of, you know, people looking at me and saying, that's how I have to do it versus figuring out how they have to do it for themselves. I would say build something that allows people to come to you, you know, instead of you going to them. I'm good at me going to them. You might be good at them coming to you. And so you just have to bet on your strengths and recognize there's a million ways to win this game. It just comes down to you executing you.
Hey, I'm Zach Moy. I'm Gary's designer. What's the best way for a real estate agent to gain buyer's trust on Twitter?
Real estate. Boy, do I love you guys. Big shout out to all the real... You know, it's funny, a lot of you are driving around right now, so big shout out to all of you guys. One of the early groups that attacked Twitter in 2008, 9, and 10, mainly because I think the housing crisis happened, and a lot of people are like, all right, I'm going to go be a social media expert. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity for real estate agents to gain trust, and I think it comes by doing trustworthy things. So first and foremost, I think you've got to put out a lot of content. And let me throw you for a curveball. This is my favorite example. I believe if you're a real estate agent, and you know the area that you sell in, that you should become the authority of the area. Meaning, What if on Twitter you put out 30-second videos of interviewing people in town that were merchants, educators, parts of the community? For example, a lot of real estate agents in the Millburn Short Hills area of New Jersey sell the fact that Wine Library is in town as a selling hook, right? It'd be really cool if one of them came to me and said, can I talk about Springfield or Millburn or Short Hills for 30 seconds? And they used that in their marketing. I believe the biggest white space in real estate is to become the expert and the media company around the area that you sell in. That is building trust because you're giving them other content besides what we all think as humans, which is, you're just trying to make a commission on me on this house sale, and that's that. You're not working my best interest. You're working at your best interest. And so by you putting in a lot of work educating me on the school system, interviewing the superintendent, speaking to Sal's Pizza Shop, who's been there for 42 years, Sal, how's the area changed? A lot. You know, those kind of things I think are really clever. And so that's one hardcore way. Now, we're saying specifically on Twitter. Here's another. I think an amazing jab, using my terminology, is somebody tweeting out that they're looking for a house. A lot of people on Saturday mornings, I've done this work, search on twitter.com/search right now, going to an open house. Search that. Go into twitter.com/search on the internet and type in the search bar, in quotes, going to an open house. You can actually make your search only 10, 20, 30 miles in radius too. If you actually, as a real estate agent, watched people who tweeted that and then replied, good luck, have a great time, not you should use me, no, not, hey, have you checked out this opening listing, but the first move was a jab, hey, you picked a great town, I've been selling homes in Cranford, New Jersey for 40 years, have fun, make sure you stop by Sal's Pizza, right? Now all of a sudden, you've brought value, right? You're not just trying to go in for the close. So there's a ton of little tactics like I just described that can make you do it, but if you've noticed, both of those take work.
Do you think brands need to be represented across all social platforms or just the most popular ones?
I think it really comes down to your business. I mean, look, I think any platform that has potential to return business for you is a worthwhile thing. I also think about resources. If you're a one or two person team, if you and your husband are running a business where you're producing handmade ties in your kitchen and you don't have unlimited hours to market your business, you may just want to stick to Facebook. I get it. I'm not mad at you. But to not recognize that Snapchat has 150 million users or 400, 500, where's Instagram now? I mean, these are massive platforms with customers. I mean, if you actually thought about social networks like storefronts, would you say, is it okay to have one store or do you want 10 stores? I mean, the answer is, what's your ambition? What's your talent? What's your North Star? So I think that one thing that people should do is after a year and a half of doing it every day, if you're not getting value from a platform, then you can let it go. That I respect. But to not do Instagram and watch, again, I'm picking on it, Netflix or play Call of Duty while running a business, that's a mistake. What I'm worried about is I'm giving you permission not to hustle and add another social network that can do business for you in lieu of other things. So there is no right answer to this other than to not be on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat or Pinterest is only leaving upside on the table, right? And so if you've got the bandwidth, you need to be there. Chapter 8, Jabs and Right Hooks. In this chapter, I talk about the number one rule for salespeople, the power of the ask, and how to amplify your audience's word of mouth. What more could I possibly say about this? Jab, the content you put out that entertains, distracts, attracts, informs, or otherwise engages and builds a relationship between you and your audience. It builds your brand, raises people's awareness of who you are and what you represent, and opens people up to receiving a right hook when the time is right. Right hook, the content you put out that brings in the sale, the one that offers 10% off, or announces a new line, or merely says, buy my stuff. It sounds so simple, but to make jabs and right hooks land with enough impact requires finesse, good improv skills, and a deep understanding of the psychology behind every platform you use. A jab on Pinterest will look completely different from one thrown on Twitter. A right hook on Instagram won't work if it's just something you recycled from Facebook. Each platform speaks to its users in a different way, and you have to learn the language. A short scan of any platform shows me that most people still aren't fluent. Want more details? Read my last book, Jab, 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 Right Hook. The end.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Alan Belcher here, former UFC top contender turned full-time entrepreneur. Now, I love business, and I've learned so much about business from Gary Vee over the years, and that's why I was so blown away when I was asked to be part of the Ask Gary Vee book. Thank you, Gary, so much for having me. What's the best advice you can give salespeople in the social media digital world age?
So first and foremost, the number one thing that you need to know, and I would say that I associate myself as a salesperson first out of every business function, more than a content provider, more than a leader, and a salesman first. And so this is a salesman talking to salespeople. Stick with me here. First, you have to understand that the game has changed on us. This is dangerous territory for us. This is not email and LinkedIn anymore, which means we can just relentlessly pound people into submission and it's going to work. Social media, you're on the record. This is public content. And if you don't have the right cadence and the right balance of providing value, you'll look like a jerk. You'll look like the guy that goes to a bar and literally hits on every girl until one says yes. And if you know that system, the odds are often 0 out of 37 efforts, especially when the 5th and 6th and 7th gal sees that you tried that already 3 times right in their face across the room at the bar. So, you know what? I'm going to make a prediction. This is going to be the part of the book that a lot of people are going to email me about that listen to the audiobook that's going to say that it helped them. Because what I'm telling you, salespeople, is you need to take a step back and understand that the rules have changed. Unfortunately, it's just the truth. Because that's what I said. I said, unfortunately, this is going to take a little more effort, a little bit more time, a different tact to be successful. So that's number one. Number two, it's content, baby. It is. You can't just control, copy, and paste to everybody. If you're going to want to sell on social media, you're going to have to read their profile. You're going to have to know what they care about. You're going to have to do something that the best salespeople that are listening to this know already, which is selling is actually more about your ears than your mouth. You've got to listen. You've got to figure out what they care about. And you've got to sit there and read their last 50 tweets. You've got to see what it says on their Facebook page. You got to see what they're posting about on Instagram. And then you walk in with that context. See, content matters, but the context matters even more in sales. That's why I love it so much. If you understand them, then you know what to give them. If you understand what's going to make them tick, then you can provide it and close them. Next, a little more tactical. Facebook ads. Understand what it means. I can go into it, and I will here. I guess that's what you paid for. But you should even Google and YouTube a little bit more to see it in practice. You need to understand what Facebook ads do. Facebook ads are the one place we can go back to what we used to do. We can hit on everybody. You can just put out content through an ad that's a direct right hook. If you target it properly, the right CFO, the right CEO, the director of marketing, the person that buys toilet paper, the person that buys IT, the wife in the household that makes the decision to buy cereal, the husband that decides to buy cereal, all that stuff is absolutely capable in a Facebook environment. So you need to become a practitioner, an actual doer as a salesperson. I get it. We don't like to do that stuff. We like to use our words, but you've got to do that. And that really matters. I alluded to it earlier, just a little bit ago, Twitter search. It is the number one place you can sell for because everybody's talking and it's an open conversation. So if you're a salesperson that likes to go to networking events, if you like going to the Chamber of Commerce and you're the one that's not passing around all the business cards and looking spammy, but no, you actually just, you know, grab some cheese and a glass of wine. You're like, hey, man, what's your name? Oh, Rick. Oh, and then you find out that Rick buys or potentially knows the person that buys what you sell and you actually build a relationship. You might go golfing with Rick the next weekend. You might actually romance a girl. You know, you might actually build a relationship, which then leads to you doing the landscaping for Rick's house 7.5 months later. Because you didn't ask Rick. Rick asked you to do it. So that's another place you have to go. You know, I'm going to go into an interesting place. I just referred to it. Fix your LinkedIn game. So many of you are doing the lowest common denominator. Go and spam everybody with the same message on LinkedIn, and you're like, hey, that was good. 3 of the 17,000 people responded, and it was worth it. It's a huge mistake. It makes you look terrible. Instead of spamming everybody and sending emails on LinkedIn through the inbox, start producing content. LinkedIn has become a content play, and you're able to post just like you are on Twitter and Facebook. And it blows me away that every day I tell this to salespeople, and they're like, really? Because they're so caught up in just emailing the connections and connecting to people that they didn't realize that they can put out content which the 3 people can share. It brings them awareness. And then all of a sudden, people are coming to you because they read something about your point of view on landscaping instead of you pitching everybody every single day. So look, the answer to this question has actually been the last 2 hours probably, or the last hour of this book, right? It's all summed up here with a couple little tactics. Facebook ad practitionership, clean up your LinkedIn game, but most of all, philosophically get into the clouds and realize, unlike phones, unlike email, unlike business cards, this is an entirely different landscape that is in the favor of the person who's buying, so you need to provide them a little bit more value.
What's the best way to make a right hook seem like a jab?
This is somebody who I'm praying to God did not read Jab, 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 Right Hook because they completely didn't get it, or I'm a sucky author and I didn't communicate it well. The answer is you don't. That's the point. That makes absolutely no sense. It's super fun to have a UFC. I wish he was in here saying, what? Like, does that even make sense? Like, you know what this refers to? You're a scummy salesperson. You're trying to trick somebody. I've got nothing else to say. That's how the question's positioned. Let me rephrase this question. How do I take something that seems like I'm bringing somebody value, but instead it's value for me? Now that sucks, and this pisses me off. So, at the end of the day, you don't. What you do is, you provide value up front, you bring people value, and then you guilt them into buying stuff. That's right. I'm not Mother Teresa, but you gotta bring them value. And so you don't. And if you do, people sniff it out. As a matter of fact, what's ironic about this question, as I take a step back from my emotion right now, is actually most people do this on social media. They do try to make it seem like it's, you know, a convoluted, tricky little, like, you can't often tell if it's a jab or a right hook, because most people don't just genuinely try to provide value. And believe it or not, some of the best social media experts, quote unquote, are actually very bad salespeople, and they're crippled. You know, they give out all this good stuff, but they don't know how to ask for the right hook. That was probably the biggest and most interesting thing of writing Jab, 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 Right Hook. So many people came to me and said, Gary, thank you. I've been putting out all this stuff. I didn't know how to go in for the ask. But this question, my friends, is not in that direction. This is why people hate salespeople. This is absolutely not coming from the right place of intent. They're looking for a quick fix instead of value, 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 then earning an ask. And by the way, an ask that doesn't mean you get the right to land it. It's just you built up enough equity to at least go for an ask. So the answer is I'm not even going to afford this question any more of my time because it comes from a bad place. Stop disguising your intent. Be clear, be actionable, build up leverage by providing value. Then you've given yourself a chance for the ask. Hopefully you can then convert.
I've been doing a lot of jabbing, but I don't feel like I'm hitting much of anything. Any advice?
First of all, much like anybody who's listening to this that is into boxing and UFC like I am, you realize some people are just not good at jabbing, right? I mean, you know, some of the greatest fighters of all time were because they were great at jabbing. This is kind of the point of the whole metaphor. Maybe what you're putting out is not interesting. Maybe it's not exciting. Maybe you're not bringing value. Look, just because you're talking doesn't mean you're providing value to a conversation. Just because you're putting pictures on Facebook doesn't mean you're actually providing any value. So maybe your jabs are not landing. Now, I'm trying to make sure I understand this completely. This may also mean that when you're going in for the right hook, nothing's happening. There, I would say maybe you have a value breakdown. For example, my jabbing, the Ask Gary Vee show, all my content on Snapchat, all these pieces of content I put out every day, LinkedIn, Medium, I'm putting out so much for free. And then I go in for a right hook. It's $13, $16, $18, right? The book or thing of that nature. So to me, that's a good value prop. I've given you $900 worth of value. I'm asking for $13. I've noticed way too many people going the other route. You put out the occasional like motivational quote or something of this nature, or a wine review, but then you go in and you ask them for a $20,000 subscription to your mastermind, or for them to buy an $8,000 case of wine after you did 2 wine reviews. So the other thing for a lot of you to think about is, do you have your balance of value, not volume, value down, that you're providing them enough value that you're actually building the equity in return. The amount of you that have tried to throw right hooks on me, and your justification was, hey, Gary, I tweeted about your book for everybody to buy it. P.S. I have 19 followers. Now, can you spend 7 hours with me and teach me how to build a business? I would call that a misalignment of value, you know? So that's the punchline.
As we go from concept to final product, how can we empower our readers to spread the word?
You know, this one, I'm going to be very direct. There's just a couple of ways to do this. As, you know, I assume that you're building a blog or a community on social networks that are reading content along the way, and soon here it comes. You know, here comes the product. You know, we've been talking about, efficiency, and here comes our calendar app, for example. That would be a common execution. There's really two ways. Number one, make the best calendar app. We've talked about this before. One of the ways to convert and empower your community to spread the word is when they actually try it. Your calculator, your calendar app, your video game, it's remarkable. And they just want to say to their friends, you've got to check this out. The other way, if you didn't just completely smash it out of the ballpark, is to actually be ridiculously upfront. Like, literally, write a blog post to your readers saying, okay, now here's the right hook, or whatever term you want to use. Thank you so much for supporting our blog over the last 6 months, 6 years. I've seen that too. We have a very important moment for us. Here it comes. It's a $4 app. It's an $8 book. It's a $12 wine. We'd love for you to support this. We don't ask often. We'd like you to buy it. We'd like you to spread the word on social networks and email. It is stunning to me how appreciative audiences are when you don't try to trick them or convince them or guilt them into doing it. You just go very direct. It's very true feedback, and they will respect that and over-index, hence the right hook.
Instagram is good for jabs, but how do you use it for right hooks?
This is interesting, because Instagram is good for jabs. Instagram is good for right hooks, just like every platform in the world. I mean, the way you use it for right hooks is you ask for it. Let me explain. I think what the person was trying to get to at the time was that Instagram doesn't let you link out. Unlike Facebook, unlike Twitter, unlike Pinterest, unlike Tumblr, unlike Google Plus back in the day, when you post something, you could also put a URL that links out. So if I post something on Twitter saying this wine's delicious, I could put a link there and it would go right to winelibrary.com and I'd be able to convert. Instagram didn't allow you to do that. Not the picture, not the copy would allow you to link out. That was a decision they made. It was probably a right decision. It's probably how it grew, at least one of the reasons. So that doesn't take away the fact that you can throw a right hook on television and on print and on outdoor media, meaning you have to use traditional media mentality inside of Instagram to throw your right hook, meaning you could put a picture there, a bottle of wine, and say, go to winelibrary.com. Sure, most people wouldn't click it. Yes, you would not have as many people convert, but it doesn't mean that you couldn't throw the right hook. Plus, what you can do is you can say, like I often do, and a lot of you know this, the link is in my profile. So one of the funny hacks is that there is one place to link in your profile on Instagram. So what I do often is if I want people to see something, I'll put it up and I'll say the link is in the profile. And then they click that and they go there. And then when I change it, great, you change it. And sure, it doesn't have all the links, but you do the one you want of that moment. More importantly, since I answered this question, Instagram ads have come out. You can buy them the same way as Facebook. And what's great about Instagram ads is that content, the picture, is clickable out. So if you're willing to payola, give Facebook a little bit more money, you can throw the right hook and you can get that link out. So the truth is, where there's a will, there's a way. It's tough to stop capitalism. And so people like myself hacked by saying go to the profile, you can use dollars, or you can just rely on traditional right hooks, which is you give them the information and you siphon a certain percentage. You may not see where the clicks came from, but you knew that you just did it. Or you can use an Instagram code like InstaWine to know it exactly came from that, if you're a quant math conversion guy or gal.
Hi guys, it's Jason Ferris at FrezYes on social media, founder of FrezYes.com and broker owner of FrezYes Realty. Here's my question for the Ask Gary V book. I've been throwing out Sugar Ray-like jabs on social for years, and the followers have flocked and engaged regularly. but it's not entirely evident what I do. I sell real estate. How do I transition smoothly to someone who can throw a perfectly timed right hook and not come off as salesy?
This is a tough transition for a lot of people, and I referred to it earlier. I think that what you do is just you have to be authentic. And I think that it needs a manifesto piece. What I mean by that is you need a signature piece of content that transitions the acceptance that you're going to occasionally throw a right hook. So what I would do on Instagram, for example, is I'd probably make a 15-second video that linked to a longer video on YouTube where it explained, hey, guys, I know I've been talking about wine for years in my kitchen. You might not know this, but I have a wine shop, and I'm going to start talking a little bit about it more, and I'm going to start offering wines once in a while. And so I actually think the answer is quite simple, even though it's quite complex. Meaning, you just gotta go there, and you just gotta tell the truth, and you've gotta make the transition, and you've gotta make it a big deal. I wouldn't half-ass it. That's why I'm going with the manifesto piece. I come out the gate and say, look, thank you so much for following me for the last 2.5 years, about gardening, about landscaping.